So if you could start with giving us your name and the branch of military service that you served.
Okay, my name is Jonathan Brunton, and the branch of service I was in was the United States Navy.
When and why did you join the military?
I joined the military right out of high school. Actually, I was in the late entry program when I was a senior. So I actually signed the contract in 93. And I went in August of 94, right after I graduated. What was the other part of that question?
Why?
I joined mainly because of the Montgomery GI Bill, because of the college money. Other than that, there wasn't a tradition in my family, except for my two grandfathers, both served in World War II, but I didn't really know that until I was in. So other than that was pretty much it.
How did your family feel?
My mom, not so much, didn't like it so much. My dad was fine with it because, you know, getting right out of high school and having that paycheck for like 4 years, because you know you're always going to get that paycheck. It's not a job where they can fire you unless you just don't care about it. It's, you know, it's pretty hard to do anything. If you just follow the rules and just be how you're supposed to, you'll be fine. So my dad liked it because that's, you know, it was a paycheck for four straight years. So.
Why did you select the Navy?
I selected the Navy for one thing. I knew it was going to get me to see the world. And a lot of the other ones, once you're at a base, you really don't go anywhere. Especially when I was in, when there was no wars. You may, if you're in the Army, you may go nowhere. And if you're in the Air Force, you may just sit at a base also. So, I mean that would have been okay, but it wouldn't have been much different than being at home, I guess.
What was your experience at boot camp like?
My experience in boot camp, since I was there in August, and it's Great Lakes, Illinois, it's pretty humid. And so it was a lot of work. I lost, I think, in boot camp, which is only, 10 weeks by the end of it, I think I lost like 20 pounds.
Wow.
It was a lot of work. And yeah, I lost a good amount of weight. I went there and I was like 180. Oh, maybe it was 24 pounds. I went there at like 184 and I came home like at 160. So it was a lot of work. And, you know, it was something when you're 18 years old, just barely turned 18 years old, you don't really realize how big of a jump it is to go from there. But now that I look back about it, I enjoyed it. When I got out of it, I didn't really enjoy it. But I do now. It taught me a lot of things.
How do you think the Navy boot camp compares to other boot camps?
Since I've never been through any of the rest of them, I don't know. I can only go by what other people say. And since nobody has really been in two boot camps, you can never really say how it is.
Okay.
Have you served overseas at all?
I was on a ship that went plenty of places, so... yeah, I've been through the Panama Canal 3 different times. I've been to Malaysia. I've been to Singapore. I've been to Oman. I've been to Kuwait. I've been to United Arab Emirates. I've been to Australia in 2 different ports. A lot of places. You know, when you're on a ship, you spend a lot of time going all different places that you may. That some of my friends, even now, at their ages, have never even been to or never seen or probably will never go to. So it affords you a lot of that different things to go and do.
What was the most memorable, like which place or?
Place or time, because there's a difference between both of them for me. There is.
I guess you could talk about both if you'd like.
The most memorable place I was to was Australia.
Okay.
I would always enjoy to go back there because the people were very friendly. They were very, very nice to Americans. And it was a place that I would always like to visit if I could. Again, it's kind of expensive because it's a long flight. But it's something I've told my family I would like to go back to eventually once we have the money. Because it's a great time. They're really nice to us. It's a nice country. And that's what I would say. My most memorable time, now that I look about it, when I got out of boot camp, I came home for 2 weeks to get time off. And I got shipped to a brand new ship, which basically means that when the ship gets decommissioned or when they stop using the ship, that I get to have a piece of the ship. There isn't very many people that ever get to have that, because usually once a ship's put in service, it can last anywhere between 20 and about 40 years. So it means I was one of the first 300 people to ever be on that ship. So my name will always be recognized with that ship, no matter what. So whenever it's decommissioned, a lot of us will go down to probably San Diego and do that. Because when we got commissioned, it's a huge ceremony. When you bring a new ship straight out of the shipyards to the United States military, it's a huge thing. They have a whole bunch of dignitaries there. It was a shipyard in Avondale, Louisiana, which is right outside of New Orleans, is where we got commissioned at. And they did it right on the waterfront, right downtown New Orleans when we did the commissioning. So it's pretty interesting, and I have stuff framed for it because of what happened. So it's pretty interesting. I enjoy it very much, and it was a great experience for somebody that's just 18 years old, just not even a year out of high school. So that's what I would say the two differences are.
And how long have you served now?
I served for 4 years. I served from 94 to 98.
Okay. What did you do while you were at the ports in each country?
A lot of times a lot of us would get together. You know, you have different sections that kind of get together. The guys that usually hang out together and in different departments would usually go out on town together. And you'd usually have at least a couple days you go out on town, and then you'd at least have one day where you're supposed to stay on watch on the ship, because you used to have certain people still watching the ship just to make sure that nobody does anything to the ship or whatever. So a lot of times we just go do excursions in town if we were off that day. A lot of us would get together and we just do different things, find something that was fun and something that you maybe couldn't do back here, you know. And I enjoyed it very much getting together with a lot of those guys, because a lot of us still stay friends on Facebook and talk to each other pretty often. So it's another, you know, community that I was a part of. And a lot of those days that we go out on the towns were great, because that's made us stay friends.
Speaking of community, having that, you know, during your service, what was it like coming out of service and coming to, I don't know, just being in a different atmosphere after?
I think for somebody like me that has 4 years, it's maybe not as hard to transition. Some people that spent a lot of time in there, they have a hard time transitioning. It was harder when I got to like some of my jobs though, because different people see different things. But when you're in the military, you don't leave until that project's finished. Mm-hmm. So you may leave at like midnight if that project wasn't finished. If you started in the morning and then something has to be done by tomorrow, it will get done by tomorrow. And you know, at jobs that I worked at here, it needs to get done tomorrow. You could just kind of keep pushing it back. Military is not the same thing. The community is, once it gets assigned, it has to get done by this time, no matter what. And you're not going to get any extra pay for it. You realize that. It has to get done. So that was one of my biggest differences, it's the work community, because a lot of people here don't go out after work or together, because in the especially in the Navy, you spend so much time together. So much time. Because there's a lot of times where you'll go out in the sea just for a week, just outside of San Diego, and come back in. Well, for people who were married at that time, or even for me, you spent more time with those guys that week than you spent with anybody in your family, because you only get to spend the Saturday and Sunday with them. Even though you spent time on a ship, like, you know, living in the same berthing, so you have to sleep near each other, you have to work near each other, you eat. I mean, it's a huge difference. You just don't get to go home on those nights. So it makes you be more closer, I think, because you just have to be.
What was your job assignment in the Navy?
First, I started as an undesignated fireman, which basically means that you get to go down to the engine rooms, which isn't something I really enjoyed. So once I was able to strike out or whatever, move up, which was like 2 years in, I became an interior communicationsman, third class, which was basically like a closed circuit television, TV. It was, you know, doing circuit boards, anything like the lower voltage electrical stuff. It was that type of stuff.
Did you enjoy that more than the...
I enjoyed that a lot more. Okay. There was a lot more opportunities. The people were a lot nicer to me, probably because they could tell I was better at that job, and that was more for me. It wasn't, you know, the other one just wasn't for me. You happen to get taken down there, and your choices are limited. You don't get to just, oh, I'm done with this, or, yeah, I don't want to do this job anymore. It just doesn't happen that way, so...
What were your expectations before going into the military, and did that change in a way?
Not really. My expectations were just that I wanted to go in, learn a lot of things, spend my 4 years trying to learn maybe how to help myself out, you know, when I got out. And I don't think the expectations changed any, because it pretty much did everything that I wanted to. It's shaped the way that I am now, and which is probably really good, the way it shaped from... I mean, I wasn't a person that got in trouble in high school anyway, but it helped me be even more like, why this has to be done, why you have to be on time for everything, why this has to be done a certain way. So it helped me in that. And that was kind of the expectations I figured anyway, because when you go into the military, you know that everything's going to have to be like this. We can do whatever. It's... has to be done this way. So
were there some challenges that you faced that you can recall in particular?
Challenges that I faced, I think my most challenging thing was having to do a job that I really did not enjoy for 2 years, basically. And spending all those years trying to figure out what I could do to move out, or where I was going to try to move out to once I was able to. I think that was my biggest challenge, because it's really hard for 2 years to do a job, basically. I mean, the military is almost like being, you know, a cop or a firefighter. It's basically a 24/7 job, because you can be called back to the ship at any time, even if you're with your family at home. Or so it's one of those things where, especially having that job like that, I didn't enjoy it very much. So it made a challenge to try to either fake it or do some of the stuff I didn't enjoy very much. That'd be probably my biggest challenge.
During the 4 years of service, did you get to come home very often, or was it like where you were stationed, you were always there for the 4 years?
No, when you're in the military, you get about a month off a year. And so, I usually took a good amount of it. And since... a lot of times if we were in port, there was a couple times where, you know, I'm only in San Diego when we were in port, so it's only a couple hour plane ride home up to here, so it's not that bad. There was times where I'd just take a weekend and come up here. So since I'm already on the West Coast, I knew guys were from the East Coast that couldn't do that, but for me it was pretty easy.
Did you get married during your time in the service?
I did not. Okay. I actually had an ex-fiance in the service, but we decided not to get married because of that point, because she had said that she was only willing to come up to Oregon for a year. So I kind of thought that as a not really a tryout period. It was kind of more like, yeah, I'll go up there for a year and we're just gonna move back. So I actually have been married. I got married to my wife outside of the military. Okay. But she knows that I'm very much a veteran. I'm very much involved with the veteran stuff. So yeah, I didn't get married while I was in the military. For me, seeing a lot of the married people, especially in the Navy, there's a reason that it's like the divorce rate's like 70%, because you don't spend a lot of time together. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, I didn't, you know, that's what it is.
So could you talk about your job now? You work at, what is it called again?
While I'm a student taking 16 credits right now, I am the co-director. I'm a senior right now, so... I am the co-director of the Veterans and Family Student Association.
Okay.
And we try to have a community for veterans kind of transitioning from military to school. And then we also are trying to help them now with our new programs that we're starting, which is called Veterans to Success, is help them transition from school to the outside world. Because as anybody that was in the military, basically all you did to go in the military is sign a contract. Well, what some of these guys don't realize is that once you try to get your next job out of college, it's a lot of networking also. Mm-hmm. So we're trying to teach them through business people from the outside that I know because I've lived here a long time, and through other people, we're trying to hook them up and be kind of like a business to student mentorship to help them understand how much networking is going to help you, how much, you know, how much everything helps you, because they're going to be with that mentor for like a year after they graduate from school to make sure that it works out for them.
That's great.
We also, like I said, this is, we basically took it from zero because they basically had like one or two veterans coming down to the organization and they didn't really have a community. Like we throw pizza parties, we've thrown a whole bunch of different stuff where, you know, we go to baseball games together with each other. We go to basketball games together with each other. So it's kind of like a community inside a community. And then we also do stuff off of campus with each other. A lot of times we're trying to create that community where they can all feel welcome because a lot of them aren't. I'm one of the only ones that actually grew up here and then went in the military 4 years and came back. Most of them, you know, we have people from Bend, Portland. We have one as far away from Alaska. We have some from California. So they're not actually really from here. So it helps to kind of create that community. We had a Christmas family, a holiday family dinner this year because it kind of helps with a lot of them that don't live here. So they got to bring their wives and their kids or just them, some of them, if it was just them, just to create that sense of community. And then, like I said, we have the new Veteran Center that will be opening here very soon. We have a ribbon cutting April the 20th, Saturday at 1, it's at 1:30. And we'd love everybody to come because it's going to be, it's a very historic moment in the University of Oregon history for its student veterans because we're going to be recognized as having our own place rather than having to share it with like five other student groups. Because then we can give more resources to our veterans.
Yeah,
we can explain to them their benefits easier. It's easier to bring people in there to help the veterans when you have your own space. Because not all veterans want to be talking out in front of everybody because that's, you're trained not to when you're in the military. Anyways, just to, you know, yell about stuff or whatever. So, and like I said, we've brought the numbers up over 500% from where they were last year. We have about 25 people that come down at least twice a week, and then we have about 60 more that come down probably once every 2 weeks. So it's pretty good from coming from one to two people to where we're at now. And we've done a really good job of advertising and helping. I mean, we did these, and I don't know if you guys have seen any of our t-shirts either. Our t-shirts have helped also. Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, the front and the back are pretty neat, so we tried to. You have to start things new. If it just doesn't seem like it's working, you have to make it more lively and think outside the box a lot of times. And for the VFSA, because we had this, it just happened to think outside the box. It's worked really well, and I'm glad I'm the co-director as the ship is moving forward rather than backwards or down.
So after you graduate, do you think it'll continue to grow, or what, how do you...
The co-director will be here another year,
okay.
And I think we've already gotten the co-director that's going to take my place. I am very positive, and I have a lot of confidence that these two will carry it forward. Like I said, they had like, even when they had their board meetings last year, there was only one or two people that come there. Well, one of them's the advisor. Well, that doesn't really count as a person. We just had a board meeting right now. There's like 10 of us there. So I'm positive that it'll keep moving forward.
Good.
May not be as big of numbers because once we're already to a certain point, you may be able to pick up a couple more, but like going from zero to that makes the percentage go up really fast. Mm-hmm. So, but I do think that they'll keep it moving forward and it won't move backwards.
What do you think, if anything, will be interesting or important to people in the future who want to know what it's like to serve in the military at this time and also during the time that you served?
Kind of mean like a high school student that's looking to maybe go in?
Yeah, anybody who's interested in going in, but also just a better perspective and somebody who's on the outside as well.
I think for me, it's the greatest learning experience I've ever had in my life. You know, being 18 to 22, you may not think that at the time because you're just getting out of high school, you just got at your parents' house, so it's really rough at the start. But as the older you get in your life, it has shaped everything that I do in my life, the way I live my life, the way I have my family life, the way that I've done the veterans thing here, the way I do school here. It's kind of all towards that. I think at first, when I first got out, I didn't I would have told people, oh, it sucks or whatever, I wouldn't go in again. But now, I think for me, I would say it's a great experience. It's something that everybody should learn. I think it helps especially people that didn't do very good in high school or wasn't growing up in high school or had problems. It very much, because I had some of those that were in the military, it helped them even more than it helped me, because it made them see the purpose. It made them see why they had to be on time, why they had to do and a lot of them would get out of the Navy, and it changed them. And for me, it changed me just for everything that's, you know, all the opportunities that I've been able to have out of it, too. So it affords you a lot of opportunities in your life afterwards, too, that people may not know. No down payment house loans. I have that right now on my house.
That's awesome.
It helps a lot by just being a veteran. They help you with a lot of stuff afterwards. And I don't know. I just enjoyed the experience very much. And I wouldn't change how it went. It worked out the way it was supposed to. So,
do you think there are some improvements that can be done to help vets after coming back from Iraq or Afghanistan, just being deployed? Just how we can...
I think that's a two-part question, because I think the government could do a lot more job. Because I don't know if you guys have seen, where are most of the cuts coming from? The sequester, the military.
Mm-hmm.
Why do we already cut from the poorest? Military people don't make very much money, and we're going to cut from the poorest amount of people. They don't make overtime. They don't, like, you know, when I was in, I knew somebody that was on food stamps just because he had a family. You're in the military. Why should we have military members on food stamps? I don't understand that. They can't go work overtime. A lot of times they can't work a second job, especially if you're in the Navy, because you're out all the time. You don't have that choice. So it's one of those things that I think right now, especially the government with all the cuts they're doing, is it's the wrong way to cut. I mean, they could cut from the senators and congressmen's pay. They make plenty of money, and they don't really do... Well, obviously, right now they don't do anything anyway, because they're not making any movements. I think it's absolutely... Or about the vets, I don't know if you guys heard about the new vets, or they wouldn't have come to Eugene. Did you hear it got stopped again? Do you know the reason why?
No.
Because one of the contractors is mad that they didn't give it to him. He's the one that actually put the order in to stop it. That's petty. Aren't we trying to help our veterans? And you're going to be really petty over because you didn't get picked for the contract?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe there's a reason you didn't get picked for the contract. I know he likes it because it's going to be a rich contract. It's like $100,000. Or it's like 100,000 square feet place. But this isn't the time to fight over something small like that. And those are the things that I think makes me kind of mad, is about, mm-hmm. like, I don't understand why the veterans are always like the first one cut when a lot of them are the poorest. Because I know when I went in, you, with some of the hours you were doing, you may be making less than $1 an hour if you really thought about it. If you actually thought about it, it made you just like, wow, this just sucks.
Gosh.
And then the other part of the question would be, I don't think the University of Oregon does a very good job of helping our veterans. We went back to a conference which is called, have you guys heard of the Student Veterans of America?
No.
It's kind of, you guys will have to check it out. It's one of these new places that's kind of like the, you guys have heard of the VFW, right?
Mm-hmm.
VFW is kind of Veterans of Foreign Wars. The SVA is kind of like the new VFW. It's really helping students trying to help students transition from the wars.
Mm-hmm.
And to be students, and then to try to graduate. And when we went back to the conference in Orlando, me and the co-director, in early January, we had found out for our size of school, which is 25,000, we're pretty far behind in what we do for our veterans here. We don't have a lot of the other places already had a vet center for 4 or 5 years. We're just getting ours. I don't understand how they don't see how far we're behind. Oregon State, which we visited this summer, they have a veterans liaison, which is a 40-hour position just to help veterans. Because you have a GI Bill, Mary, you have a GI Bill benefit person. Well, they have that at Oregon State plus that other 40-hour position, because there is so much stuff that veterans cannot understand when they get out, and they need a lot more help doing it and then helping them transition from, because it's a really hard transition to go from high school to military back to college.
Mm-hmm.
When you just go from high school to college, pretty easy. You're just going from institution to institution, so you are still on that mindset. The military guys that I hear talk about it, that are like maybe sophomores or juniors, really struggle the first year with like taking too much credits, trying to take 16 rather than 12, and they don't understand how to manage their time because they're used to somebody else managing their time, or that you have to be this certain place from 8 to 5 every day. But here it's like, oh, we have these classes on this day, these classes on this day. And so it makes the transition a lot harder. And sometimes people not understanding how they learn differently at this point or that kind of stuff, because it's just really hard to make that transition back. And so I know when we have, we're going to have the executive director of the Student Veterans of America. It's actually going to be the keynote speaker. Okay. At no charge of the U of O. I signed him up. And so we're going to have him here the day before to basically talk with some of the administrators on where they need to go with veterans. And it needs to be a lot better than where we're at now, because I'm not matching them up against schools that are 75,000 or smaller. I'm matching them up against ones where we should be at least on the same level playing field. If not, like right now, we're like 3 levels below. And it's just, for me, that has always grown up in this area and has always been a University of Oregon fan, has always wanted this to be my school, I'm kind of sad at the way that it's treated.
Do you think the understanding is not there, or do you think it's just a bureaucratic problem?
I think it's a little bit of both. Okay. I think it's a little bit of bureaucratic problem, because we've found out even through this process of trying to get our own space, I don't know how many meetings I've had to go in and basically like fight with people about, are you serious? Is this what we're going to do for our veterans? It's taken a long process. We started this process in the summer. What is it now? I mean, it's going to be April in 2 weeks. I mean, that was a long process just to get something, I thought, simple, done. And the bureaucratic process here reminds me of like being in the military a lot of times. It takes way too long to get something simple done. When if I was working a regular job, it would take like 2 days to get it done, figured out yes or no, rather than, oh, we'll give you a maybe for a couple months. And that's kind of where it taught me when we were going through this, what the university really thinks of their veterans, because I would have thought this would have been a very easy process. And look, I mean, we've been an organization since 2006 here at the University of Oregon. I mean, and nothing even since then. So that's, I don't know, it's kind of one of those things. So for me, I think it's, I'd like to see a lot more positive, and I hope when we get this Veterans Center set up, it'll be seen as a lot more positive. And that's what I'm hoping for, because I know the other thing that we've been hit with on a couple of these things is that there's other organizations that want to move in with us also. And I've just been like, well, why would I want to do that? I already have a place. I'll just stay with that place already if this is what's going to happen. So I don't know. I think the University of Oregon do a lot better job, and I hope this helps them see that they could do a lot better job. Because my biggest explanation was, do you realize how much a veteran brings into money that you don't have to chase them down for a loan? It goes straight from government to government. It's a pretty easy process. You're not, you know, no other student group has that here at the University of Oregon. Nobody else. So I know it's sad, but that's how the university likes to look at things, money things. Well, there's your money thing. That's a lot of money that could go away pretty quick if you're not going to be, or you could go up a lot better if you're seen as veteran friendly. They can change your numbers going up too. So that's what I would say.
So you see the transitioning out of the service and into college life is difficult. How do you help the veterans to overcome that difficulty?
Well, for right now, because we don't have a veterans liaison or whatever, or anything like that, it's some of the older people like me, like a senior or some of the seniors that have been through it, try to help them transition. Like there's been a couple people that I've helped them stay at school. And one of the people has said that a couple times at some of the, you know, veterans places we've been to. It's telling them that, hey, 12 credits is full-time. Consider that full-time. Do not take the 16 credits because, unfortunately, I hate to tell you, you're not ready for it when you come straight out of the military. That shouldn't be your first term. It should be the 12. And then you can start figuring out, okay, this is a great study time for me. Or this is a great study time for me. I'm better at studying at mornings, better studying in afternoons, or better studying at night, rather than taking the 16 credits and you've already overwhelmed yourself just from the start. And I don't know if any of you know, if you do the 16 the first term you're here, it pretty much overwhelms you. Mm-hmm. No matter what you think, oh, 12 credits, that's only 3 classes. Yeah, that's a lot of papers, a lot of it can over, and then them just trying to do 16 just overwhelming. So that's how we help them try to transition, is talking to them, kind of counseling them on how this would be the best way to go about it. And most of them will listen to it on us, and most of them, it turns them out a lot better. They're like, oh, thanks for helping me out, because, you know, I was really starting to get overwhelmed. It's like, you know, the GI Bill says 12 credits of full time, so take that as a full time. You know, you think it's only three classes, but just help yourself out. So that's kind of how we help them transition at this point. That's one of the biggest things.
Do you find that rewarding?
I find it rewarding to help people out so they don't seem so stressed, because I think, I know I don't like to be stressed. So if I can help somebody else not be so stressed, all the better, you know, all the better for them. If I've went through that and it didn't work out for me, it's probably better to explain to the next person, hey, I tried that, didn't work out very well, so how about you just do this? I'm telling you, it'll work a lot better. And then you won't fail classes, or, because like the GI Bill doesn't pay when you fail, do they? Okay, I think you have to pay it back. So it's kind of one of those things where, why would you even want to do that? Because if you take the 16 and then you fail one of them, well, you only got 12 credits anyway. And then you get in trouble by the GI Bill. So just keep it at that.
Is there any other things that you would like to discuss concerning your time in the military that you served, or coming back?
Like I said, for me it was a little bit different when I came back, because I'm not coming back from like wars.
Yeah.
And I know now veterans are seen, now people are way accepting of veterans, and it's a big issue, which I'm glad it is, that people are more looking at it as something different. I think that's the way, I wish that's the way people would treat veterans most of the time, and they don't. And I know I've talked to some of our other veterans, and they don't understand when they're getting thanked for their service, and they don't always like to be thanked. I just talked to somebody about that the other day, and what my comment was to him is, do you remember how the Vietnam veterans came back? Basically, they were spit on, they were yelled at, protested against. I said, so if you get thanked, you should probably just take it, because it's way better than what some people had to see when they came back from war. Now people see it more as, you didn't sign up for the war, you just signed a blank check to be sent anywhere they send you. You can agree with it or not agree with it, but that's what I've always said. The soldier or the sailor or whatever, they probably didn't go in to shoot anybody, I'm pretty sure. Because I've told everybody the top two things that people go into the military for, one is for the college money, and the second one is because it's a family tradition. They don't go into, oh, that's my top thing, is I want to go and shoot somebody or whatever. They sign a blank check, and you get sent wherever and whenever they want to send you anywhere. So that's the thing.
While you were on the ship, did you get to communicate with your family, or like internet, or could you send out letters?
Well, when we were in, the internet wasn't very good. So you didn't have any of that set up, and the sea phone was so expensive that the captain was really the only one that really got to call out. So a lot of times it was through letters, or when you stopped at a port, you could go get a calling card a lot of times and call them from there also. So that's how I usually communicated. I'd wait until we got into port. I'd get a phone card or whatever, because some of the places weren't that bad, except for when he went to Oman and he gave him $1 and he got 33 cents back. That's where I didn't do a lot of anything there. So that was the biggest thing, was letters. You get care packages from like your family. But it was calling when you're in port. It was pretty much the best thing to do.
So. Did you find that helpful?
I found it pretty helpful. Yeah. I mean, I think everybody finds that very helpful, because that's your one contact with like your family. Some people's like, it wasn't a big of a deal, because, you know, like for me, I'm single, but it was good at some points, because sometimes some ports you needed it more than others, where you had a really hard struggle from one port to the other, where it was really hard work, or you just, so sometimes it's that time where you can tell them about, oh, what happened, and it makes you kind of relieve that stress, because you usually don't tell anybody in the military, because you're kind of always all going through the same thing, and they'll be like, oh, stop complaining, we're all going through it, and different names and stuff. So that's what I think it helped.
Were you ever awarded any medals or a citation, maybe?
I have some awards, but a lot of them I wouldn't, you know, I don't look at them all the time. It's just stuff that you kind of put in your closet anymore. I mean, so, yeah, I've never gotten any, like, huge medals, but, you know, there's different stuff that you get. I look a lot more, or I see a lot more of the, like, certificates that I've gotten just because those are framed. Like I said, the plank owner one's framed. There's one that the Navy has that's called the Order of the Ditch, and it's basically like if you go through the Panama Canal once, you have one. So I'd have three, but they only gave us one. There's one that's also like for a shell back, which is once you go over the equator, you get one also. And then once you go over the timeline, you get one also, international timeline. So there's been different stuff I've been given. But like I said, I think when they're in the military, sometimes when you get out for a while, you just kind of forget about it. So I think most military people I found don't. Because my wife tells me that a lot of times. My wife tells me, like, when we're at family functions, we're like, when somebody else will talk about their lives and how much stuff she's done, she's like, why don't you say anything? Because you've done so much more than some of these people. And I'm just like, yeah, but that's just not me. I'm not a bragging person. It's not me. And I think most veterans aren't really braggy people because, I don't know, it's just different, I guess. And I guess one of the other things I would add, which is totally on a different subject, was this is one of the things we've been talking about, the VFSA, is how the media wants to make everybody that every military member shot somebody or has PTSD. I know that's something we've went through because you have interviews we had earlier in the year where somebody that would be like one of the first questions asked is one of those two, because we're going to send out a new thing to the J school basically saying how you should interview a veteran so you don't make them really mad. Mm-hmm. Because some people wouldn't understand, well, why can't I just ask that question? Because most of us don't have PTSD. Most of us have never shot anybody. But the one person that has, I know a couple of them, it brings up really horrible nightmares, really horrible stuff. Because, like I said, about the shooting thing, that's not something they wanted to do. But for them to save their own lives, it was something they had to do. And the PTSD, most of us, I mean, especially for somebody like me on the ship, I don't know why I'd have PTSD. Or like a lot of the other Navy members that we have down there, they don't worry about it. Because I know when we set up our new center, that's one of the things we have to do is make sure the chairs don't have their backs to the door. It's because of people that have been in Afghanistan or Iraq, because that's just something you don't do, is put your back to somewhere where somebody's entering the place. So I know that's one of the things we've been trying to really get out to people too, is about the PTSD, just not asking people and just not asking if you shot anybody. Because I've always said, you know, I think with veterans, some people don't realize what's maybe inappropriate as questions, but like if they were to interview somebody, you know, that was like was gay or something else, they would know what they shouldn't ask. Well, veterans are the same thing. I mean, there's certain questions that are just highly inappropriate. So,
do you think having the VFSA, having
the VFSA, and then we have that's the Student Veterans America thing.
Okay. Do you think having this building, or just, I don't know, being more recognized on campus, do you think it could create a better awareness for just respect and just better understanding for one, not asking those questions, and just understanding the diversity of, you know, the military, you know, just there's all different kinds of people serving.
Well, I know we had talked about this earlier when we've been in some other meetings, is that when I've had other interviews, I take it as two totally different things. Like the students, I've noticed a lot more the students are understanding than some of the administration, which I find really weird when the students are usually, 18 to 22, and the administration are all older than me. They're in their 50s and 60s. But I found, like, we went to a student council this year and asked for $3,000 because we didn't have money to go to the conference. And so after we won unanimously, it wasn't even close. Nobody voted against us. And after that, they thanked us for our service and stood up and clapped. I mean, that's not something I totally expected from, you know, kids that were all 18 to 22. But then you go to some of the administration and you hit a lot more brick walls. Like, we're trying to set up for people for that April 19th when Michael shows up early. I sent stuff like 3 weeks ago and I've gotten like two things back. I mean, it's one of those things that I don't know if it's they want it just to go away, the problem to go away, or I don't understand, because that's one of my things is like, you would think you'd want to show to Michael, who's a national thing. You think you'd want to show him that the University of Oregon is veteran friendly. I don't think it's going to help if I invite all these administrators and like three show up. He's not going to say very much good stuff probably about like, yeah, the University of Oregon's. If somebody calls him up or they, you know, and asks, oh, what schools, you think he's going to say University of Oregon's veteran friendly? Probably not. Which like I said, is very, very important to me, because I've always been a University of Oregon fan, and I living here and always seeing this place, I'd like it to change. I know it can change. It's getting the right people to make it change. Do I think the center will help that? I hope. I mean, you always can hope. I always hope for the positive. Whether that happens or not, I can't make somebody do it. Mm-hmm. I wish I could, but I can't. I would hope, because the president, the University of Oregon president, is going to be at the ribbon cutting. I will hope that since he's new, maybe this will make him change the way that the rest of the administration looks and how they look at their veterans, or how some of them treat their veterans. Because, like I said, the students and instructors have been great to me, and the students. It's administrators get more to look your way. And sometimes that's the worst part, because they're the ones that make a lot of the decisions. I mean, the students and instructors don't make a lot of the decisions. If it was up to that, we probably would be a lot further along, I think.
Do you think there's many misconceptions from the general population of non-military members towards that of veterans or just military members in general?
Yeah, like I said, I think the whole PTSD and the shooting thing, I think those are two of the biggest misperceptions, that we've all shot somebody. Most of us, like me, rarely ever carried around a gun. Because I'm on a ship, what do I need to carry a gun around for? We usually only had one person that actually carried around a gun on a naval ship. Out of 300 people, it's not very many. At one time, you usually had one or two of them that would carry around a gun at one. I mean, so that's one of the biggest misperceptions. They make it such a bigger deal. Or I've noticed in the media a lot of times, like if somebody does something wrong, what's the first thing they say about them? It's not the job. It's not their family. It's that they were a veteran. Like how about the guy in Arkansas that kidnapped the kid? What's the first thing he said about him? He's a Vietnam veteran. Why does it matter what he was? That probably didn't shape the way he... I mean, because he was like in his 60s, so I'm pretty sure it was Vietnam that didn't shape the way he was. It may have been like something else. It sounded like he was a weirdo anyway. And there was something else recently happened, and the first thing he said was veteran. Like, but that doesn't shape like if they're a shooter or if they kill somebody. It doesn't. I mean, shouldn't be the first thing you should bring up. Why don't you bring up his job that he had like 3 weeks ago? I mean, could have brought that up also. I mean, what's the difference? So I think those would be the biggest. It's the PTSD also. I mean, very rarely, it's like when somebody, like the criminals, what is it? Like, I think they say 3% of the criminals cause all the crimes in the United States because they keep repeating. Well, the PTSD people, that's probably like 3% also, but it's the same guys that you keep seeing do like, or going to the hospital. Okay, well, let's keep it to that. It's the 3-6%, I think, is what it is, that have like the extreme PTSD. Because that's what I've always told people. The thing with college students, do you think many of us would be able to function if we had high levels of PTSD to be student veteran to college? No, you wouldn't be able to get through school. If any of them have it, it's like a small, and it's not, they're not going to snap, they're not going to go shoot everybody, they're not going to do any of that stuff. They're just regular veterans that, you know, got out of high school, took a little bit of time away from like the rest of things, and then came back to college, and that's what they're doing now.
What kind of ship were you on when you were in the Navy?
I was on LSD, which stands for, if you're in the Navy, large sitting duck. But it's actually supposed to be landing ship dock. It's basically a ship. And if you guys want to look at it, it's called the USS Harper's Ferry. It's LSD-49. It was based out of San Diego. Well, like that, we got it from the shipyard in Avondale, Louisiana. It was commissioned January 7th, 1995. And then we went straight back to San Diego through the Panama Canal. Had a couple stops in between. We stopped at Panama City, Florida. Then we stopped right in Panama to get rid of some of our trash. We stopped right next to, it's called the Bridges of America. Basically bridges the continents together. And went through the Panama, or that's after we went through the Panama Canal. Then we stopped in Mazatlan, Mexico, and then went back to San Diego. And it was based there for a long time until it was based in San Diego recently, based in Japan recently, and now it's back in San Diego again. The landing ship dock basically is a ship that basically is a marine carrier, because there's 317, I think, Navy personnel. But when you go out on deployment, it's like almost 600 Marines. It carries all their vehicles, because basically what that kind of ship does is that it deballasts all these tanks, takes in water. There's a well deck in there. It's a whole bunch of boards. And then LCACs, which I don't, do you guys know what those are? Basically hovercrafts. They put marine vehicles in them. They come up, the marine vehicles get off, they go back out, get more marine vehicles, come back in. So basically what that thing is if you had a war where you had ground troops, it basically backs up, gets down, loads all the troops off. So that's why it's called, that's why the Navy likes to make fun of it, it's called a large sitting duck, because you're basically sitting in the sand to be shot at. Is what you're doing, really. Because you basically deballast your ship so it can't go anywhere. So, I mean, luckily, now you have carrier groups, so we'd have carrier with us. You have a couple submarines. You'd have a couple frigates or destroyers. So, I mean, you are the ship that's sitting next to it, but you have a lot of, like, firepower near you anyway. So, I mean, because I don't know if any of you guys know that the Navy has the most amount of aircraft, actually. Has more, even if the Air Force is the Air Force, they don't have as many aircraft as the Navy does.
I didn't know that, actually.
Yeah. Not everybody knows that. A lot of people look at me with their eyes like, it's true. It's because those aircraft carriers can carry a lot of planes. So.
Did the ship have a general mission while it was...
I don't think any ship has a real general mission. It's kind of a certain thing. Like back when I was in, you know, every 2 years you went on at least 1 6-month deployment where you're gone from your family and everybody for about 6 months. And you're basically going from port to port. Basically you're just showing the military flag. And at that point, because I went in a couple of years after the first Gulf War, you always had to go to Kuwait and drop off the Marines for like 30 days at a time. And they'd go training in the sand. Because we still have a U.S. Army base in Kuwait. I don't know if you guys knew that. Because the Kuwaiti government sees us as, you know, because we did basically help them in the first Gulf War, basically from Saddam Hussein basically taking over their country like he was going to do. So they still see us as as an ally. And so we have an Army base there, and the Marines go out in the sand for, I don't know what they do, for 30 days and train at that time. To basically like what just happened, trained for that to basically oust him. So we'd been training for that for how many years? We've been doing that since what, 92? I don't know if everybody knew that, but you know, every ship would take out Marines, and that's what they basically dropped off for, was to do that, which in hindsight was, you know, a good plan, because they knew you would never change. So very, very well prepared.
Was there much friction between the Marines and the
Navy?
Yeah.
No, but there's always joking.
Okay.
Because I don't know if either of you guys knew this, that the Marines are a department of the Navy. Mm-hmm. That's what their checks say on the bottom. So the Navy can always make fun. So your check says what? Oh, that's right. It doesn't say the Marines. It says Department of the Navy. So if you guys didn't know that, that's... So I think, and this is what I've always told everybody about the military. It's kind of like your little brother. You can make fun of them, so each other military can make fun of their branch, but if somebody from the outside that's never been in the military makes fun of it, it doesn't usually go over very well, because then both the military guys, even if they're from different branches, will attack the other person like, oh, really? So you were in the military when? So it's one of those things that the banter back and forth between the military guys is pretty funny if you actually go down to the VFSA, because it gets pretty harsh at times, but they just look at it as that's my brother. That, because the other thing that we had written, I don't know if you got to see our Emerald piece. We were in the Emerald last week. We were in the Emerald on the Monday one. And so we were talking about how, like that, no matter what era of military you're from, I can talk to somebody from the 60s or the 70s or whatever. We share a lot of the same common stuff. If they just know you're a veteran, you know they're a veteran, it kind of eases the conversation right there. Because then, like a lot of our stories, we don't share with everybody. Just because, why is that? Because they just don't want to share it with everybody. Some stories, we have a guy that is part of our board that's a community member. Well, he didn't share his story from being in Vietnam until he found the VFSA. I don't know how he found it, but the other VFSA board members, the older ones, a couple years ago basically started talking with him, and then he started sharing Vietnam stories. Or like some of the Iraqi, Afghanistan people are in there and had some bad stuff. There's probably only a couple of people you're going to share it with, and it's going to be another veteran probably until they get maybe older in life. Because they know you're not going to look at them differently. Yeah. I'm not going to look at them differently if he said he had to do this. I'm like, yeah, well, you had to do what you had to do. But they're not sure how a civilian that maybe doesn't understand it, or maybe like they don't know if they're anti-war, they don't know how they're going to see it. Even if they were just the veteran and had to go do the job. So...
Are there any closing remarks that you would like to say?
No, my only closing remark is, I think me being in the military, like I said, taught me a lot. One of the things it's taught me now is like being a leadership role, and because it helps me also, because I'm in a leadership role. I ref high school football here, okay. And I'm one of the youngest high school football refs to be a white hat, which is the main referee for varsity games in this area. So I think the military has helped me do that for being leadership roles, or this leadership role also. So I would always say that it was probably one of my greatest things I've done in life that taught me a lot, other than, you know, getting married and having a kid. That would be like third probably, would be being in the military and teaching me everything that I've learned. That's probably about all I'd say.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Yes, thank you.